World's on fire. Our culture is disintegrating.
Hey, pass the salt.
It's time. Hey, you, pass the salt.
You know why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed in this program are based on the Holy Spirit
jellyfish
of a man
pass
called
the salt, will you?
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Oh, I slept wide awake last night. Is that even possible? Well, I did. I slept wide awake last night. Why? Eyes wide open. Let me see if I get this thing to work. Yes, sir. My eyes were wide awake all night last night, and I wasn't scared. I'm not worried. I'm excited. 2016. You know, make day politics is going to stop. What are we going to talk about? What is CNN and MSNBC and what are they going to talk about with the with all the politics gone? Praise the Lord. Well, we need some reform in America, don't we? Huh? We need to take the election season and by law make it a month. Just a month is all. We need to figure out a way that here would be the greatest thing of all. Let's bring those congressmen and those senators, let's bring them back into the local districts and make them stay here and do all their meetings by gotomeeting.com like everybody else. Let them go to Washington, D.C. maybe 1 week a month or something like that. But they need to be in their district. Do you ever try to get a meeting to meet with one of your senators or one of your congressmen? Try to can't. They're not held accountable to the people. They're held accountable to the lobbyists. Let's get them back here where becomes again government of the people, by the people, and for the people. How can you have any influence on some guy you never met? I get emails all the time. I'm not making fun of anything. I get emails. I read every email. I try to respond to every email. But reading an email is not like meeting Big Rich face to face. When I met him face to face and he talked to me, it is a heck of a lot different than reading an email. We have no contact at all with our elected officials. They get away with everything that's going on. Boy, what a time to be alive. I feel like we are sitting on the verge of the second American Revolution. I don't know who's going to win this election tonight. I know who's going to win. I don't know who's going to be declared the winner, but I certainly know who's going to win. And after that whole thing's over and tomorrow we get up, we are going to have for us a course, a plot laid out before us what we're going to do, how we're going to fight, and how we're going to survive, and what's going to happen. Because ultimately, as I've always said, tomorrow it's going to be, let's make the church great again. Now, the church will either rise or the church will be crushed. So I'm going to say it again. The church is going to either rise or it's going to be crushed. And what I think we have to do, those of us who are in the queue and the on by for, we have to make a commitment right now to get involved. We've got to begin getting our churches involved. Hey, Michelle, if you can come up here, I want to put him up here. I'm going to ask if you, there he is. Come on, it's my buddy Tom Munns. He's so Tom, they can't see you. There he is. Tom's a hero. I'm Boise, Idaho. He's become a local hero. Talking about something every day. You ready for this, Sarge? Hey, Sarge, I know the FBI's. When I get on my internet at home, I'm not home right now. I told you I'm in Argentina. Internet at home, it comes up on my internet. You know, you can tell down the bottom, the little thing tells you what networks are available. Mine always comes up FBI mobile. Always. So they're watching me. And now they're watching Sarge. And they're watching everything that we move, because I'm going to tell you, the last thing that they want is an informed, active citizenry. See, they don't mind if it's Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, they can go out in the streets and they can burn down buildings and they can flip over cars and set them on fire and they can riot and they can do all kinds of stuff. And the government steps back and just lets them do it because they're providing, they're working an agenda for the government. Understand? But the last thing they want is for folks like me and you to get involved, really get involved, because they know, they'll never admit it. They know that we're the heart and the soul of America. And as I've been trying to tell everybody for however long we've been doing this show, it's a white Anglo-Semite, the white heterosexual Anglo, white heterosexual Christian male. If the white Anglo-Saxon Christian male ever awakens, this nation will turn. But we have just this time frame done because, guys, listen, 25 years from now, although a white population, I think I saw the other day, is somewhere in the neighborhood of about 62% of Americans. I could be wrong. Numbers flying around in my head. A majority is white. In a generation, in other words, when my children are grown, when my children are my age and their children are having children, it ain't going to be that way anymore. It just isn't going to be that way anymore. So even though they haven't told us this, the truth is we are facing head on a race war in America. It's for a battle for the survival of Western civilization and particularly the white Anglo-Saxon heterosexual male. Now, white Right Wing Watch will pick that up. And I thank you again, Right Wing Watch, because you are throwing our viewing numbers way up. Because I'm just telling you the truth. And you go to a Trump rally, and I haven't been to one. But you look around a Trump rally, you know what you see? White Anglo-Saxon Protestants. That's what you see. I'm going to shake all of you up a minute because I'm going to turn to my good friend, Tom Munns. Tom is a whiz kid out in Idaho. I woke Tom up. The Holy Spirit woke Tom up through me. How many years ago, Tom?
Seven
years ago. He'd never read a book. Tom had never read a book. I'll say it again. He had never read a book. And I went out and did what I do out there to cheer this guy, and he's become a phenomenon in Boise, Idaho. And here's what I want to everybody, the militia, the well-regulated militia, what it was supposed to have been, and what Tom is doing, meeting with local sheriffs, trying to revive the American militia. At least he's doing it in Boise, Idaho. And I was thinking about that. Why aren't we doing militia? The job of the militia is not to overthrow the government. The job of the militia is to stand in support of the sheriff and the community or the local magistrates. And you think about your local police department. I'm going somewhere. Stay with me. You think about your local police department. If all hell were to break loose in your local town, how many cops are there? I mean, really, how many cops are there? If ISIS still, how many cops are there? On your local, in Ohio, we call it sheriff's department. 20? Are there maybe 20? How long would it take them to override 20? What if a real crisis really, really breaks out? See, when I was growing up, Roger, Larry, we had what was called civil defense. Do you remember that? Because we were about the Russians were going to come and they were going to bomb us. And so therefore, we had to have some civil defense. Right where you live right now, what is the civil defense in your town? Yeah, that's what I thought. So I'm going to put the headphones on Tom here a little bit. And Tom, I want you to give us a little explanation of the militia and how it was supposed to work. It used to be a dummy, but he ain't a dummy anymore. So here you go. This is Tom Munns. Get up here, Tom.
Thanks, Coach. Good morning, guys. Well, nothing like being put on the spot to do that to me from time to time. I wanted to start by reading something when Coach was talking about the white Anglo-Saxon male. This is from Federalist 2. This is John Jay. With equal pleasure, I have as Providence has been pleased to give us this one country, this one connected country to one united people. A people descended from the same ancestors, speaking the same language, professing the same religion, attached to the same principles of government, very similar in their manners and customs, and who by their joint councils, arms, and efforts confiding side by side throughout a long and bloody war, have nobly established general liberty and independence. I woke up about 8 years ago, Coach, through the Lord through Coach, had woken me up to all of the things that were going on today. Like you said, I read my first book. And so there's something that happened. You know, it's like one of those things, if you've ever gone to a church retreat, if you've ever gone to one of those free, weekend church retreats and you just feel like you're on fire and you're going to, you know, you're on fire for the Lord and nothing's going to stop you, only to find out a couple of days later, you know, you're back to the same thing. You know, for me, it was my sailor talk and some of that stuff. But, you know, I mean, and then seeing what's going on, and it just gets genuinely frustrated. But to make a long story short, he had me on to talk a little bit about the militia. So I will tell you, I have studied the Constitution. I began studying presuppositional apologetics.
My cop buddy said the national average is 1,000 people yeah. to one police officer.
Yeah, it sure is. That's absolutely true. And so basically what happened is, So I'm employed by one of the longest standing liberty organizations in the country. They picked me up about 2.5 years ago. And I've had the habit and the luxury of traveling the state of Idaho. And I, in addition to my work duties, one of the things that I was very passionate about was trying to really figure out what was going on. And rather than beating cops over the head like I used to, you know, when you first wake up, everybody's your enemy. You don't really have any idea who anybody is. And then I really asked myself what I really wanted to accomplish by doing what I was doing. And in so doing, I ended up separating myself, or the libertarian friends that I found out were anarchists began to separate themselves from me. And it was kind of sad because I just saw this continual disunity, which was really a problem. I had visited with the police chiefs and sheriffs for about 2 years. I've been visiting with the Idaho Department of Homeland Security. I was visited by the FBI several times. I visited with the sheriffs. I've now been teaching kids at the juvenile detention center. I've been doing a God, Man, and Government class, and the kids were absolutely overjoyed by what happened. And they want me back. Basically, what it ended up coming around to, I was trying to make a point here, is that I wasn't really sure how I was going to become really effective in doing what I'm doing. So I just started building relationships with police. I didn't really have an agenda. I didn't really want to push anything down their throat. I think I identified with, and I think that they really appreciated it, considering I'm the first constitutionalist that has ever really gone gone that way and putting a target that big on my forehead. I had a conversation. I say all this to tell you that I had a conversation with the sheriff a little bit ago, which I think they're complaining about your internet. So when Coach tells you I was going to tell you a little bit about the militia, it's kind of funny because I just got a long email from my sheriff after I had taken some notes off of something that I had written. But they're very, very fearful of the militia. They're fearful of the Lightfoot militia. They're fearful of the Oath Keepers. They're fearful of the 3% group. They're really big out here if you guys don't know about them. And so they actually used me like intel. And the interesting thing about that was, in the Liberty Movement, you know, we don't really have anything to hide. So it's like I'm giving them secret information, even though all of my friends know that I'm communicating with police, because we really do have nothing to hide. He was talking about how overwhelmed that he would feel one day if the, you know, if the crap hit the fan. And the interesting thing about that is, I said, what would you do about that? Overwhelmed, but our founders had put in our check these significant checks and balances. And I said, what is? And he looks at me and he said, what? And I said, the militia. And so his eyes just kind of went like this. And I said, yeah, that's right. I said, most people don't really even know that much about the militia, even those people that are movement. Well, I took that information back myself and I thought, I don't even really know that much about the militia. I mean, I know about the Second Amendment. I know about the First Amendment. I know about the founders' intent. I know about, you know, a lot of other issues, but really the historical significance of it. And what I can share with you thus far is that I think Coach had Edwin Vieira, you've had him on the show before and stuff. And I thought, well, he's the foremost constitutional attorney, been to SCOTUS and, you know, the Supreme Court and done cases and things, but he really does a wonderful focus on the militia to the point where he calls it constitutional homeland security. So he's got a volume one that's about 180 pages. And then his volume two is 2,309 pages, and it comes on a CD. Well, whatever I have, I say that to say that if I miss anything, one of those things that I would strongly recommend that you guys do if creating a militia is something that you want to do is, number one, which we should already have been doing as Christians and as, you know, Christian patriots especially, is we should have been building a relationship with our law enforcement anyway, because it's just absolutely necessary before absolute chaos happens, and they need to be able to separate their friends from their enemies the best way they know how. So situation, I believe it was completely divine by that happening, because I just don't think that I would have thought of doing that on my own. But some of the things that are really, really important to understand about the militia is that there is a certain protocol that is required to be able to do it. I believe that some of the militias that have actually started really were probably done a bit incorrectly in the fact that they give the appearance of being private. And that is very, very dangerous territory there, because then the government can list you as a subversive entity. Militias are government, believe it or not. He calls them government entities, and they're government entities because they're supposed to be public. And to be able to clear up any problem that people might have is that when the question becomes who the militia, that's a big question that the sheriffs and the police chiefs have. Now, we have to remember, I keep going back to this because I'm kind of disfragmented here, but our local police, in at least in my county, all 44 counties, the cops do not believe in federalization at all. However, they don't know enough about the separations of power and the checks and balances. Well, the federalization is the incremental. Well, there's several definitions. One of them, the one I'm talking about right now, is that the federalization is the incremental encroachment of federal authority upon the states and the people. And so Obamacare, for example, Department of Education, for example, EPA, for example, some of those things, executive orders and that. Now, I don't even know where I was going with this. But where was I, Coach? Anyway, I visited with the police, and I had done all this, and I've been talking. They are a government entity. They're not supposed to be private. It's interesting when you go into the Constitution, and I – forgive me for not having it, but it talks about the militia of the several states. Well, in the information that I had about the militia first, what it said was is that it needed to be called up by the governor. So my automatic assumption was, oh, okay, so if it's not called up by the governor, it's unlawful. Well, that is until you understand that the 10th Amendment says the power is not delegated to the federal government, is authorized to the states or the people. All of a sudden, that is another check on the system, thinking, okay, the federal government is actually supposed to be supporting the militia, believe that or not. The federal government is supposed to be able to support the militia of the several states. And the reason why is because the states have to be able to defend themselves collectively as a nation. And our founders, about not having a long-standing army, they viewed two of our greatest threats, the largest, and the large national treasury. So if we have a long-standing army, the army could just as well be used against the people, which is the danger that we're looking into now. So Edwin Vieira makes the argument that the militia is the only constitutional homeland security that we have. So going back to what I was saying is that you have the federal government is supposed to be able to authorize the militia, and if the federal government doesn't authorize the militia and arm the militia and train the militia and doing those things, it is the duty of the states through the 10th Amendment to do so. Because if the federal government doesn't want us to be able to collectively protect the nation, then it is the state's duty to be able to protect their own states. However, If the governor does not have the authority to be able to, or if the governor decides that he does not want to acknowledge the militia, which he is not currently in Idaho, according to the 10th Amendment, the people actually have it too. And what was really interesting for me was I was learning about the 10th Amendment, is that the 10th Amendment, it talks about all these separations. The powers that are not authorized to the federal government are left to the states or the people. Well, the or the people part is if the states aren't doing it, which is the greatest thing that which is the greatest thing for us, because it helps us bring in the whole understanding of our founding principles of the fact that it was we the people. It was a government by we and for the people that actually created our form of government. Therefore, the preservation of liberty depends on each one of us. It depends on our Christian knowledge of our own Christian heritage. It depends on our understanding about the Constitution. It depends on all of those things. And I commonly use the Sun Tzu quote, you know, those that do not know themselves and their enemy will be imperiled in every battle. I mean, I'm sure you guys have heard that before, and you know that just as well. And so I've been battling attorneys with this, and one attorney in Idaho, there's a good friend of mine. He says, well, Tom, the militia is actually for you know, the Navy. No, that's not true. The militia is not the Navy. And there's some, you know, understanding about the organized and the unorganized militia. Well, if you go to our Constitution, there's no delineation between the organized militia and the unorganized militia. And so when you go through, and he goes through and he uses quotes about the establishment of the militias and all of that, I think the one thing that I got away from it, you guys, was that the militias take some time. One of the things that we're dealing with in Idaho that I've worked tirelessly on is to try to bring people together. And as independent people, we don't want to be collective in just about any stretch. I mean, look at what happened to the Christian church. I mean, we've got tremendous division in the church, you know, where you can, where it's, you know, where they believe you can't cut your hair, or maybe you can't wear covered footwear or whatever it is. So on every level, we're completely divided. And so my whole point was trying to be able to bring people together and do that. Well, the one thing I realized that was really difficult is that we are divided because of our lack of knowledge. So we don't have, I mean, what, Hosea 4:6, right, coach? It's we're destroyed for lack of knowledge. Well, we are destroyed for lack of knowledge because we can't stand unified in any way, shape, or form. And so it's hugely important for us to not only understand our scriptures, not only to understand our form of government, but we need to understand who we're standing with. And I think that's part of what I think I commend the military for doing. While they're going through all of those hard knocks, and they're going through boot, and they're going through all of these different trainings, is that they become intimately familiar, and where they reside together, they become intimately familiar with one another to the point where they become brothers. And that's where I think we're really lacking. And so if you guys are interested in the militia type of a movement, I didn't mean to take up Coach's show here, but if you guys are interested in the militia, Edwin Vieira would probably do a much better job than I would. His first job, Constitutional Homeland Security, is wonderful. I think if you guys plan on doing that, though, I think we probably need to be really careful. We need to reach out to our local police first, okay, and build an agenda with them. So,
I'm going to give you guys a chance to ask Tom a question if you want to. Here's what I think we need to understand. All politics is local, and what's getting ready to happen in America is going to require local organization. And we need to begin working on that. Whether we call it a militia, whatever it is we want to call it, it doesn't matter. But we have got to begin locally, right where we live, to get organized with other people who are going to be able to defend our community when the police are no longer able to do it. Now, the left has done a great job of taking the term militia and making it something scary, when in fact it is embedded right in the Constitution. It's not supposed to be scary. We were never supposed to have a standing army. But let's be honest. Those guys, when they set it up, they couldn't envision a world in which we live in today with nuclear weapons and drones. They couldn't envision that, certainly. But the idea was never have a standing army because we were going to be able to protect ourselves. So as this thing begins to unwind and come apart a little bit at the seams, our organization locally, beginning tomorrow, is going to become more and more important. Anybody down here at the bottom, they want to jump in here?
Yeah, I want to say this. Coach, you got to get in touch with Larry Nichols because Larry Nichols is using the different state militias to oversee the voter fraud. Yeah, especially, I think they started off in North Carolina. I'm not sure exactly, but there's a whole group of militias that are interacting to help with the voter fraud, especially in the inner cities where the protection of individuals going in to watch out for voter fraud isn't there. The other thing is that Larry Nichols is very strong on states' rights because he said that is the only thing that would stop a Hillary presidency. And you've got to understand what the state's rights are, where the governor and the people of each state have that sovereignty that has been ignored. We've thrown it all into the federal government, and that's why we're in such a mess, because we don't honor and respect the state's rights to, it's like the example is gay marriage. Every state, there were 32 states that voted in no gay marriage. And the federal court threw it out.
So I want to say this right up front. To those people who keep emailing me about me interrupting, it's my show. All right, it's my show. I'll interrupt when I want to interrupt. I love Mike and what he's saying. I love it. But we have to understand that there are, this is not directed to you, Mike. We have to understand that there are people tuning in all the time and don't even know what the hell we're talking about here, right? So a lot of times I interrupt them all to keep the show moving. So I know this. Oops, I'm sorry. Larry Nichols is doing that. Pastor Matt Tuella with the Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates. He's doing it. Tom's leaving me. The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates, all that stuff. This is, guys, listen to me. This is what it's going to come down to. This whole idea of this overblown federal government being the nanny state, that is coming an end, either by their choice or by our choice. And we have got to begin to get organized and prepared. That's all I'm saying. Walk into the church. You want to empty a church? Walk into a church and mention militia. It'll empty. Because why? Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It says, if you take that, if you were a good English student, a well-regulated militia, here's the most important statement of all. Being necessary for the security of a free state. Let me go back there. A well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary for the security of a free state. Do you understand the importance of that? The security of a free state is dependent on what? A well-regulated militia. A well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, comma, the rights of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Connect it all. The well-regulated militia, the right of the people to keep and bear arms for the security of a free state. Do you understand where we are and what's going on? Now, as Chad just emailed me here, 1,000 police officers to every one person. And so let's say that they get in my town, something breaks loose in my town, and there are 20 cops there. 20. I live in an area where I probably shouldn't say this. Because you just never know. Hey, there ain't no security in my neighborhood. You know what I'm telling you? Probably up there where you live, Sarge. Huh? Somebody breaks into the door and they're shooting my wife. I dial 911. Well, they'll just call the undertaker. The cop won't be able to get there in time. These are what we're talking about. I'm not talking about inner cities. I'm talking about out where the people live. When a financial and social breakdown comes, are we going to be organized? That's one of the directions. See, some of you are so stinking nervous right now because you've been so programmed that militia is a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's a good minute. I apologize for interrupting, Michael, for all the people on Facebook and YouTube who say I'm mean and I've never let my guests finish. First of all, you ain't a guest. You came. You busted into my house. I love you anyway, Mike. Anybody else want to jump in here and add something?
Yeah, I would like to ask. Here in the county I live in South Carolina, the militia reached out to the sheriff's office.
Can you hear this? Tom can't hear this. Right. I want Tom to hear this. Larry more than me. Hang on.
All right. Here in the county I live in South Carolina, the militia attempted to reach out to the sheriff's office to coordinate information and like you said, be transparent. But the sheriff very early on let it be known that he didn't believe in militias, and that if a lawful order came down from the governor or the feds or anybody to go collect guns, he would go do it because he was an obedient public servant and he would obey any order given him. And so what does a militia do in a situation like that? Go underground?
I have some friends that were part of the 3%er group, and I'm not sure if you guys have ever heard of that group, but it kind of internally combusted like every other liberty group in Idaho. So in essence, everything in Idaho is pretty well dead right now, except for an occasional meeting with the Lightfoot Militia or something like that. My point in saying that is when the new group started, what they wanted to do was they came to me and they wanted some advice on how to start the group. And I said, well, I'm pretty humbled that you guys would think to come to me. I said, but what is it that you're going to do? Is your new group going to, let me guess, support the vets and local police, right? And he said, yeah, how did you know? And I said, I don't know, maybe call it experience. And so I said, so what does that look like for you? And he goes, oh, well, you know, if we see a cop that's, you know, overreaching his authority, we'll just tell him. And I said, how do you think that's going to look to them? Is that going to look like you support them? The problem is that they don't understand who their friends and their enemies are. The first thing that's most important, number one, is they've never seen us before. When I talk to a lot of the sheriffs and some of that stuff, even the mere mention of the word Constitution is a new phenomenon for these people. So if they, and we already know, I already have police chiefs and sheriffs in my state that already admit without any problem, Tom, you know way more about the Constitution than I do. Well, the problem I think I see is that I came at this without without an agenda. Well, I mean, sort of. I wanted to be able to get to know them. I wanted to get to understand what their feelings are, what their fears are, what they're up against, how they view certain groups of people. And I wanted to be able to extend an olive branch to them and say, here is my card. If you have an issue with anybody in the movement, I want to know about it. And so I kind of assumed power and control that I really didn't have, but all I really wanted to do was to be that that liaison for them, you know? And so I think that has been the one thing that has been given me the most success is the ability to be able to reach out to the police, to be able to talk to them, to find out how they feel about certain issues, and to be able to address those issues. And so the reason why, and so the sheriff's really, it doesn't, people will say, oh, well, I have an unconstitutional sheriff. You have an unconstitutional government. Don't be giving the sheriff crap because you think that he's a bum. You're the one. I mean,
can't hear. Froze up.
Gone.
Internet. Internet.
Go ahead. Was somebody going to say something?
Yeah, somebody tell me it's breaking up.
We didn't hear the past 30 seconds.
Oh. I'm not sure how I can redo that. Okay.
Since the word bomb.
So, pardon?
Jared's a webmaster. He said redo your last 30 seconds.
Oh, okay. Can you do that? So, basically, what I was talking about really was a little bit more detailed about reaching out and building relationships with your police chief and sheriff. So, the whole phenomenon about the constitutionalism is something that's really new to these sheriffs. I talked to a sheriff that's been involved for 28 years. He and I are tight. We email email each other about every other week. He just emailed me an awesome email saying that I gave him a copy of Clausen's 5,000-Year Leap and the Making of America. And about a year ago, he said it was because of me that he started reading the Federalist Papers.
So, Tom, let's stop a minute here. I'm going to – listen, Tom, 7 years ago, you were a dildo, weren't you?
Pretty much.
And what happened? I mean, other than – don't tell the whole story, but you started reading and investigating and what?
Yeah, I just started reading. I started reading, and I became as active. And there are times where you're going to make mistakes, guys. I mean, it just happens. You know, you do it in sidewalk ministry. You do it in anything else. You know, you screw up a scripture or what, pray that everything was received to the person that you were talking to correctly and all that. But, you know, Coach has seen it. You know, we all learn by our stripes. You know, we get scourged and we make mistakes. We're humble enough that we try to correct those to those that can receive, the forgiveness that we're asking for to be able to do the things that we want to do. Is it a book or an audio? Is he talking about the book?
Somebody else.
Oh, okay. So, so the relationship with the sheriff is really, really important. And what's really critical, though, is if you the multi-center fusion center watch lists and things like that have become a real-time communication source for a lot of law enforcement. And the greatest thing about that is that not only are the bad thing about it is obviously that bad news or whatever they perceive to be bad news can travel very quickly. The other thing that's really interesting that we can use to our advantage is the fact that good news travels the same way. So, you know, I may have been visiting him when I was in Montana and getting him, you know, putting myself on the Fusion Center watch list. But then on the other hand, I've got police chiefs and sheriffs that are seeing me as a viable source of intel from a constitutional perspective. And they're thinking, how can this guy be anti-government when he was the one that was reaching out to government? Well, that was really the only way that I could be able to earn my due process back. Was to be able to try to reach out to these guys and help them understand that a lot of what has been going on for a long time. I'm not sure how old any of you guys are, but my organization has required me to go back into history to be able to understand where we're going. And part of that is understanding the war on the police and how it began in the 1960s. So when you start looking at the Cloward and Piven strategy, so I have a pile of stuff that I have when I walk in there. And I said, hey, I'm Tom Munns. I walk in here I want to learn a little bit about what you've got going on. I want to share with you about where we're going, and I want you to be able to feel comfortable calling me anytime you need to. And I think it's because of that it has built built a good relationship. So not only now am I getting into, have I gotten into visit police chiefs and sheriffs? I actually have a. I'm actually happy to tell you this, and my friends on Facebook don't even know this, is that I just got my first opportunity to educate the third largest entire police department in my state. And so I will guarantee you is going to open up other people to get into other to be able to get into the Idaho Post Academy.
Tom needs his own show. Here's what I want you. Here's what I want everybody to understand. Tom, I didn't mean to throw you off, although I just kind of kicked you out of there. Listen, folks, we are beginning tomorrow, win or lose, whoever wins, it doesn't matter. We're moving into a new era of American government. I'm telling you, tomorrow, it is going to begin to start happening. No matter what happens, if Trump wins, you think those idiots are going to sit quietly by and watch what goes on? And do you understand that at some point, your local police are going to have to pick sides, yes or no?
Yes.
They're going to have to pick sides at some point, your local police are. And all Tom is saying is those of us who are on the ground, who love the Lord and love our nation, and we are law keepers, we're not law breakers, we've got to begin to build relationships. We need to begin to build relationships locally with others who are going to help defend. Guys, if a financial collapse comes and everything breaks down, do you think there's even going to be cops? Is there even going to be a local sheriff department that's going to come and help you? And if there is no local sheriff's department that's going to come and help you, what are you going to do? See, those are the things we have got to begin to think outside the box and realize where we are as a men of Issachar, understand the times in which they live and knew what it was that Israel should do. I'm sick and tired of people inferring that I'm anti-government. I'm not anti-government. It's government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And I won't take the bait, and I won't begin to apologize because I want to stand for liberty. Now, if the one who wants to take my liberty happens to be the government, we've got a problem, don't we? We have a problem. That's what's come. Can't you see? That's what's happening even right now. Now, when we wake up, no matter who president is president of the United States, that's going to become softer. It's going to become more and more centralized and more localized. And the impact for us as American citizens, right where we live, to have an impact, it's never been greater. It's our chance to make church great again. That's the way I see it. I got something I want to share with you. Anybody want to jump in here? What do you think, Sarge? Somebody help me out here.
Yeah, I wanted to say from a contrarian position, I just saw something recently here on Facebook, a guy who was going back to 2 years ago, and Christine Legrand from the IMF was trying to give her Illuminati friends a picture of the future. What it all boiled down to was the fact that here's a conspiracy theory that they are throwing out. They could have been using Hillary all along as part of a dialectic, knowing that they wanted Trump in, because if they get Trump in, then they can go do the economic collapse, worldwide collapse, and then they can blame it on Trump, and that gets them closer to their goal, which is the one world religion, one world economy, and the one world politics. So we've got to start thinking outside the box, but what you just said, which is this financial collapse, regardless of who's this financial collapse is going to come.
I quit trying to figure out what they're doing, okay? I mean, indict Hillary, don't indict Hillary, charge Hillary, don't charge Hillary. This guy's for this guy. It's all just a fog of confusion. It's all just a fog of confusion. And here's what I want you to do, every one of you, to learn to block the man in front of you. Don't worry about the guy out who's blocking the cornerback out there. Don't worry about it. Who's going to say, damn guy lined up over the top of you. We have got to begin to focus and make it understand. He whispered, get to know your sheriff. Just go and introduce yourself to your sheriff and let him know that you are a friend, you are not an enemy, and that what can you do to help? Because ultimately, every one of us, Hubie Brown, the great basketball coach of the New York Knicks, said that your life is going to become, you come to the realization that in the end, everyone is out to cover his own ass. When you understand that applies to your local sheriff as well. It applies to your local school superintendent. It applies to your state representative and your federal representatives. In the end, they're just covering for themselves. And when we can understand that, the position that they're taking, they're trying to figure out who their friends are. And so we have to be one of the first guys in the door, say, hey, listen, I'm with you. I'm on your side. I know your job's tough, and I'm working with some guys out here. We want to be able to stand with you and make yourself known to them. Simple, right? Because, listen, tomorrow the battle begins anew. Does anybody want to jump in here? I got something else I want to show. I haven't even read from the scriptures yet, have I? Oh, my goodness. Open this thing up real quick. I'm going to read this real quickly. And then I go, oh man, I promised you I would read this, Ezekiel 3. I promised you when I read Ezekiel 2 yesterday that I would read Ezekiel 3 and 2. Jared's going to get it up there. And while Jared's getting it up there, I'm going to go ahead and begin because I got a little video I want to show you at the end. Ezekiel, remember yesterday, Ezekiel 2, we talked about Ezekiel and talked about impudent children, and he sent us to the children to tell them, and they're not going to hear us because they're impudent, and all you're going to tell them is lamentations and mourning and woe. Do you remember that? And remember that in the Bible, there are no chapters. We've just put chapters in there. So Ezekiel continues on. He says this, moreover, that means building upon what I just said. Moreover, he said unto me, son of man, eat that thou findest. Eat this roll and go speak unto the house of Israel. In other words, the Lord's putting a word in your mouth. Eat it. Chew it and swallow it and eat it. So I opened my mouth, and he caused me to eat that roll. And he said unto me, son of man, cause thy belly to eat, and fill thou bowels with this roll that I give thee. Then did I eat it, and it was in my mouth as honey. It was sweet. What the Lord said to him was sweet, and he ate it, and he swallowed it. Hang on. Verse 4. And he said unto me, son of man, that's you. Go, get thee over into the house of Israel and speak with my words unto them. Remember, he told, already told us, you got to go do it. He says, here, I'm giving you the words. Swallow it, eat it. For thou art not sent to a people of a hard language. Speak to people who understand language. Not to ministry a hard language whose words thou callest not, cannot understand. Surely, had I sent you to them, they would have hearkened to me. He said, if I'd sent you to strangers, they'd have listened. It's them church folk that ain't going to listen to you, he's telling us. Verse 7. But the house of Israel will not hearken unto you, for they will not hearken unto me. For all of the churches are impudent and hard-hearted. But behold, I've made your face strong against their faces, your forehead strong against their foreheads. And as an adamant, harder than flint, have I made your forehead. Fear them not, neither be dismayed at their looks. Though they be a rebellious house. I'm going to stop right there. Put on your face of flint and go face them dogs. And them dogs are those in your own household. Are we picking this up yet? See, we haven't even identified the enemy. The Lord told us your enemies shall be those of your own household. And the reason all this evil is coming upon us is because those who are supposed to be on our side inside this thing called the church have turned against us. And the more that you come and you begin to speak the oracles of God and speak the truth of God, the more you do that, the more they're going to reject you. He just told you. He said, if you'd gone to the world and told you, you're going to hear it. At least that's the way I hear it. That's the way I read it. That's the way I read it. What time is it? Okay, I want to get this in. Jared, let me find it over here before I sent you all that stuff here today. Jared, I want to pull up, where is the stuff? Is that it? Yeah, Jared, let's go down. Patrick Henry, Jared. We've been here before, fellas. We have been here before. This is read by Orson Welles. It's about Patrick Henry's in the Declaration of Independence speech, this famous speech. Listen to his words. I wish I had him to throw up in front of you, but I don't. It's about 7 minutes long. Go ahead and play that, Jared.
Delivered before the Virginia Convention of Delegates by Patrick Henry on March 28, 1775. Mr. President, no man thinks more highly than I do of the patriotism as well as abilities of the very worthy gentlemen who have just addressed the House. But different men often see the same subject in different lights. And therefore, amen. I hope that it will not be thought disrespectful to those gentlemen if, entertaining as I do opinions of a character very opposite to theirs, I shall speak forth my sentiments freely and without reserve. This is no time for ceremony. The question before the House is one of awful moment to this country. For my own part, I consider it as nothing less than a question of freedom or slavery. And in proportion to the magnitude of the subject, ought to be the freedom of the debate. It is only in this way that we can hope to arrive at truth and fulfill the great responsibility which we hold to God and our country. Should I keep back my opinions at such a time through fear of giving offense, I should consider myself as guilty of treason towards my country and of an act of disloyalty towards the majesty of heaven, which I revere above all earthly kings. Mr. President, it is natural to man to indulge in the illusions of hope. We are apt to shut our eyes against a painful truth and listen to the song of that siren till she transforms us into beasts. Is this the part of wise men engaged in a great and arduous struggle for liberty? Are we disposed to be of the number of those who, having eyes, see not, and having ears, hear not, the things which so nearly concern their temporal salvation? For my part, whatever anguish of spirit it may cost, I am willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it. I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. I know of no way of judging of the future but by the past. And judging by the past, I wish to know what there has been in the conduct of the British ministry for the last 10 years to justify those hopes with which gentlemen have been pleased to solace themselves and the House. Is it that insidious smile with which our petition has been lately received? Trust it not, sir. It will prove a snare to your feet. Suffer not yourselves to be betrayed with a kiss. Ask yourselves how this gracious reception of our petition comports with these warlike preparations which cover our waters and darken our land. Are fleets and armies necessary to a work of love and reconciliation? Have we shown ourselves so unwilling to be reconciled that force must be called in to win back our love? Let us not deceive ourselves, sir. These are the implements of war and subjugation, the last arguments to which kings resort. I ask, gentlemen, sir, what means this martial array if its purpose be not to force us to submission? Can gentlemen assign any other possible motives for it? Has Great Britain any enemy in this quarter of the world to call for all this accumulation of navies and armies? No, sir, she has none. They are meant for us. They can be meant for no other. They are sent over to bind and rivet upon us those chains which the British ministry have been so long forging. What have we to oppose to them? Shall we try argument? Sir, we have been trying that for the last 10 years. Have we anything new to offer on the subject? Nothing. We have held the subject up in every light of which it is capable, but it has been all in vain. Shall we resort to entreaty and humble supplication? What terms shall we find which have not been already exhausted? Let us not, I beseech you, sir, deceive ourselves longer. Sir, we have done everything that could be done to avert the storm which is now coming on. We have petitioned. We have remonstrated. We have supplicated. We have prostrated ourselves before the throne and have implored its interposition to arrest the tyrannical hands of the ministry and parliament. Our petitions have been slighted. Our remonstrances have produced additional violence and insult. Our supplications have been disregarded, and we have been spurned with contempt from the foot of the throne. In vain, after these things, may we indulge the fond hope of peace and reconciliation. There is no longer any room for hope. If we wish to be free, if we mean to preserve inviolate those inestimable privileges for which we have been so long contending, if we mean not basely to abandon the noble struggle in which we have been so long engaged, and which we have pledged ourselves never to abandon, until the glorious object of our contest shall be attained. We must fight. I repeat it, sir. We must fight! An appeal to arms and to the God of hosts is all that is left us. They tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be the next week or the next year? Will it be when we are totally disarmed, and when a British guard shall be stationed in every house? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? Shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by lying supinely on our backs and hugging the delusive phantom of hope?
until our enemies shall have bound us hand and foot. Sir, we are not weak. If we make a proper use of the means which the God of nature hath placed in our power, 3 millions of people armed in the holy cause of liberty, and in such a country as that which we possess, are invincible by any force which our enemy can send against us. Besides, sir, we shall not fight our battles alone. There is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations, and who will raise up friends to fight our battles for us. The battle, sir, is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. Besides, sir, we have no election. If we were base enough to desire it, it is now too late to retire from the contest. There is no retreat, but in submission and slavery. Our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard on the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable. And let it come. I repeat it, sir. Let it come. It is in vain, sir, to extenuate the matter. Gentlemen may cry, peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it the gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take. But as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
So here's the reality of it, see. We've been here before. And no matter how often we try to help you understand this on this show, this is a battle between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman. It is not going to change. It will change appearances. It'll change characters. It will change techniques. But it isn't going to change. This is not Republican against Democrat. This is not liberal against conservative. This is an assault on Western civilization. And tomorrow morning, when we get up after the election tonight, we are going to know what lays before us, which direction it is that we have got to move. But as we just heard Patrick Henry say through Orson Welles, we're fools if we think just laying on our couch and going to church is going to have any impact at all. We're the greatest of fools. I'd like nothing more to be able to take my grandkids and go play golf. I'd like to go with everybody else and go to the football games and celebrate and have a good old time and go home and go to sleep and wake up the next day and go do the same thing. I'd love nothing more than that. But the reality of it, that's not the choice that's before us. And if we go down that route, if that becomes the direction that we want to go, then I'm here to tell you that Western civilization as we know it is going to crumble. Now listen, Christianity won't. Christianity's going to go in. Shake your head. Your eyes are stuck. We're not talking about Christianity dying. We're talking about America, Western civilization dying. That is a reality that is before us. Our chains are being forged, no matter who wins. So that's what's facing us. We wake up tomorrow morning, November 9th, 2016. We watch Fox News tonight and all the lying and cheating and stealing that's going on around us. And we can't see that there's one set of rules for those in power and another set of rules for all of us. Don't pay your taxes and see what happens. Look what the Clinton Foundation has done and see what happens. Open your stinking eyes. See, this is bigger than we realize that it is. But I'm a man before you today, a man of great confidence that we just read in Ezekiel. He told him, if you go to the church, that's our charge here, guys. That's our charge. You go to those churches and you tell them what's going on. He said, if I sent you to the world, they'd get it. I'm not sending you to the world. I'm sending you to those rebellious, impudent people. That's who I'm sending to. Lamentations and mourning and woe. That's what he said. And we have got to go deliver the message tomorrow, no matter who wins. No matter who wins. You know, we all look at death. It's something out there waiting for all of us at some point, isn't it? Oh my goodness. I'm thinking that at the moment of my death, there's going to be great celebration on both sides, isn't there? It's going to be great celebration on both sides. Yeah. The God haters will be high-fiving each other, and some of the church folk, they'll be high-fiving each other, because my life has been for the last 15 years to be a thorn in the flesh to the church. That's what I've been trying to do. And guys, tomorrow the battle begins anew. It begins anew. It's not Republican, Democrat, pro-life, pro-death, not any of that stuff. We have a charge before us to make the church great again. I can't wait till tomorrow. I'll be watching all the returns just like you. If it's not rigged, Trump will win. If Trump doesn't win, we know we got to strap it up now, don't we, boys? Huh? Enjoy all the lying you're going to hear tonight, and all the fake polls and all the opinion, not all the guys with all these opinions. Enjoy it all, because tomorrow we get up and we begin anew to make the church great again. God bless you. We'll see y'all tomorrow.
All right. 1 second. Wait for it. I mean, you're good, I think.
Okay. Listen, I'm sorry that I cut Tom. Get down here a minute so he can see you. I'm sorry I cut him off. We'll get him a show to do a whole show, a whole presentation. He'll be a little bit more organized. If I can get him up out in Boise, Idaho, get him moving. We'll get that done.